Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today we open our show with our Capitol Report, bringing you some important stories out of our nation's capital. Hear about anti-labor actions taken by the Trump administration over the Labor Day weekend. And then we'll have startling developments in the confirmation hearing for Supreme Court Justice nominee Brett Kavanaugh, including newly released documents showing that Judge Kavanaugh committed perjury multiple times during his Senate testimony, as well as early efforts by Republican leadership to block those documents from being reviewed. In local news, a bench warrant has been issued for the arrest of Jessica Colasho, wife of El Cajon Councilman Ben Colasho and current leader of the Middle Eastern Chamber of Commerce. Find out why on today's show. Now, as for Councilman Colasho, we fact-checked his campaign materials, and we found some inflated claims about his record on the council. Another fundraiser is planned this weekend to help West Fire survivors in Alpine, and we'll tell you how you can help on today's show. Congressman Duncan Hunter, who is under indictment on federal corruption charges, could lose his congressional pension if he is convicted of the felony counts. On the second half of our show today, we'll have an interview with La Mesa Councilman Bill Baber, who will be sharing news about a ballot initiative approved by the City Council that will let voters decide whether to impose an excise or business tax on marijuana dispensaries. Plus, hear why the City Council is also considering an ordinance that could legalize recreational marijuana sales in La Mesa. On Destination East County, hear about all the top festivals and events coming up across our region, including a grape stomp, a powwow, concerts, a music festival in Julian, the Borrego Days Parade, Halloween happenings, and our very own East County Dining Club event at Four Penny House in La Mesa. We'll also have an update on a controversial sand mining project in Lakeside, with information on how you can make your voice heard on this important issue regarding the newly released environmental impact report and a public hearing coming up on the matter in Lakeside. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Gene Carpenter with the Capitol Report. President Donald Trump started the Labor Day weekend by issuing an executive order canceling a modest 2.1% pay raise for federal workers, and ended the weekend Monday by denouncing Richard Trumka, president of the AFL-CIO, the nation's largest labor union. The actions following a string of anti-worker actions taken since Trump took office. The president did tweet, "The worker in America is doing better than ever before. Celebrate Labor Day." Yet his actions have actively undermined the well-being of many workers while rolling back regulations on corporations. The results have helped businesses boost their bottom line with an aim toward trickle-down economic growth, but often at the expense of workers. For example, the Trump administration has appointed anti-labor representatives to the National Labor Relations Board, supported laws to make it harder for unions to organize, opposed increasing the federal minimum wage despite many working poor who are living below the federal poverty level even when employed full-time, issued executive orders limiting powers of unions representing federal workers, an action blocked by a federal judge, killed a rule requiring companies to keep records of workplace injuries long-term, backed lawsuits to destroy public unions, slashed health care benefits, eliminated rules to protect workers from dangerous chemicals, canceled an executive order to increase overtime pay for workers, appointed pro-corporate anti-labor judges. The president's criticism of Trumka came after the labor leader appeared on Fox News Sunday. Trump has said he may seek to drop Canada from the North American Free Trade Agreement. Trumka noted that the economies of Canada, Mexico, and the U.S. are integrated and that dropping Canada could harm the U.S. economy. For instance, many Canadian autos are made with parts made in America. Trump fired back on Twitter saying Trumka represented his union poorly on television this weekend and blamed Democrats for the decline in unions' power. As for killing the federal pay increase, the president's action could be overridden by Congress. The Senate has already passed a measure calling for a 1.9% increase, so now it will be up to the House to determine whether pay will be frozen for federal workers or not. One major beneficiary of the Trump administration's attack on labor protections has been Trump's own business ventures. Trump paid over $1 million for labor violations through his business enterprises, the New York Times reported in November, and has reportedly hired low-wage immigrants over American workers through his companies. He has also been sued for a wide range of alleged labor violations, ranging from sexual harassment to unpaid wages.
The Senate confirmation hearing for President Donald Trump's Supreme Court Justice nominee, Judge Brett Kavanaugh, opened Tuesday over strenuous objections from Democrats who asked for postponement to allow time to review 42,000 pages of documents reflecting Kavanaugh's tenure as White House Staff Secretary to President George W. Bush. The documents were provided to committee members only the night before the hearing. As California Senator Kamala Harris and other Democratic senators pointed out, several senators asked for adjournment of the hearing as protesters interrupted repeatedly to call for justice, but Republican Chairman Chuck Grassley refused all requests. Here is a clip from C-SPAN of what that sounded like.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to be recognized to ask a question before we proceed. The committee received just last night, less than 15 hours ago, 42,000 pages of documents that we have not had an opportunity to review or read or analyze.
You're out of order. I'll proceed.
We cannot possibly move forward, Mr. Chairman.
I extend a very warm welcome.
We have not been given an opportunity to have a meaningful hearing
on this
nominee.
Their two daughters.
Mr. Chairman, I agree with my colleague, Senator Harris. Mr. Chairman,
Judge
we received 42,000 documents that we haven't been
everyone
able
else joining
to review
us
last
today.
Night, and we believe this hearing should
be postponed.
I know
this is an exciting day for all of you here, and you're rightly proud
Mr. Chairman,
of
Chairman, if we cannot be recognized, I move to adjourn.
The American people...
Mr. Chairman, I move to adjourn.
...directly from Judge Kavanaugh later this afternoon.
Mr. Chairman, I move to adjourn. Mr. Chairman, we have been denied real access to the documents we need to advise.
Mr. Chairman, regular order is called for.
Which turns this hearing into a charade and a mockery of our norms.
Well,
and Mr. Chairman, I therefore move to adjourn this hearing.
This is a mockery and a tragedy of justice.
A key concern for many is that Kavanaugh argued on behalf of President George W. Bush that a president should not be subject to criminal prosecution while in office in order to avoid distractions from conducting official duties. With Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller already securing numerous indictments and guilty pleas in his probe of Trump-Russia ties, critics argue that as an unindicted co-conspirator who could potentially face charges or even impeachment, President Trump should be blocked by the Senate from appointing a nominee who believes that a president is above the law and should not be held accountable legally for his actions. The actions of Chairman Grassley are unprecedented in Senate history. The only other recent Supreme Court nominee to have worked for the White House was Justice Elena Kagan, an Obama appointee. President Obama released all documents requested regarding Kagan's tenure, unlike President Trump, who sought to claim executive privilege and release nothing. The documents that were released were provided by former President Bush's attorney, not the White House, and they are still only 7% of Kavanaugh's White House record. Equally seriously, Kavanaugh also committed perjury during his confirmation hearings multiple times, crimes for which a judge could be impeached. On Wednesday, he testified under oath that he first learned about President Bush's warrantless wiretapping program, also known as the terrorist surveillance program, from a New York Times article in 2005. But on Thursday, an email was released proving that back in 2001, Kavanaugh emailed John Yoo, the Justice Department lawyer responsible for that infamous torture memo. Kavanaugh asked Yoo if there were any results yet in the random constant surveillance of phone and email conversations of non-citizens in the U.S. to prevent terrorist criminal violence, in his own words. Senator Patrick Leahy revealed that Kavanaugh also committed perjury in 2006. During his confirmation hearing, when asked by the late Senator Ted Kennedy if he was disturbed by extreme statements made by judicial nominee William Pryor, Kavanaugh testified that he was not involved in the selection or vetting of Judge Pryor. He also denied any recollection of ever interviewing Pryor in testimony this week. And then Senator Leahy entered into the record a formally confidential email in which Kavanaugh was asked, "How did the Pryor interview go?" and responded, "Call me." He lied yet again in his 2006 confirmation hearing when he denied receiving any Democratic memos stolen off a server by Republican aide Manuel Miranda. But emails released this week show that Miranda sent Kavanaugh an 8-page email, cut and pasted, from a clearly marked Democratic strategy document and marked confidential. Perjury or lying under oath is a felony under federal law, and yet the Senate's Republican leadership seems unfazed by these serious revelations. Kavanaugh also issued a 2012 ruling siding with a casino owned by Trump to thwart a union drive, an action that has led some to contend that Trump offered the Supreme Court bench seat to Kavanaugh as a reward. Kavanaugh is currently a circuit judge on the U.S. District Court of Appeal for Washington, D.C., with a staunch conservative record. He is rated qualified by the American Bar Association. He holds a law degree from Yale University, and he clerked for Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy. He also worked for Special Prosecutor Ken Starr during the investigation of President Bill Clinton before later joining the Bush White House and winning a judicial seat. Conservatives are eager to push through the confirmation of Kavanaugh, who would provide a conservative 5-4 tilt on the Supreme Court that could prove decisive on issues ranging from rolling back abortion rights under Roe v. Wade, as well as key decisions on issues such as union rights, gay marriage, and more. Kavanaugh has indicated he does not consider Roe v. Wade to be settled law during the confirmation hearings, meaning it could be overturned if the balance of power on the high court changes. Republicans argue that the vacancy must be filled immediately to avoid a 4-4 tie on the high court after the retirement of Justice Anthony Kennedy. But Republicans had no problem leaving the court with just 8 justices for the entire last year of Barack Obama's presidency when they refused to allow a vote on Obama's nominee Merrick Garland or any nominee. Instead, they held no hearings at all and postponed action until after the 2016 election, which Trump won, depriving Obama of a final nominee. Democrats argue that since Republicans refused to allow an up or down vote on an Obama High Court nominee during his last year in office, so too should a decision on Kavanaugh wait until after the November midterm elections, when the balance of power in the Senate could shift. But that argument has been brushed aside by the Republican leadership, which also eliminated the filibuster. In the past, the filibuster assured that 60 votes were needed in the 100-member Senate for any controversial matter if a member chose to block action by filibustering. But now, the minority party, currently the Democrats, no longer have any mechanism to block the high-stakes judicial nomination except through the court of public opinion. This is Miriam Raftery reporting on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
A bench warrant for the arrest of Jessica Colosho, wife of El Cajon Councilman Ben Colosho, was issued on August 31st by San Diego Superior Court Judge Timothy Taylor. The warrant was issued after Jessica Colosho failed to show up at a judgment debtors conference in a civil lawsuit filed by attorney Jimmy Parker on behalf of 3 contestants in a beauty pageant run by the Coloshos and by owners of an El Cajon taco shop. Plaintiffs allege sexual harassment, fraud, and defamation by the Coloshos, who jointly operate the Miss Middle East beauty pageant and the Middle Eastern Chamber of Commerce. A bench warrant is issued by a judge when an individual fails to follow court rules or comply with a court order. It differs from an arrest warrant issued after a law enforcement officer establishes probable cause that a crime occurred. Sheriff deputies are not actively seeking out Colosho for arrest, but she could be arrested if she is stopped for a traffic violation or is present at any public function, including El Cajon City Council meetings. If she is taken into custody, her bail has been set at $500. The Coloshos do not have an attorney of record, and are suing their former attorney, Stephen Leosi, alleging malpractice they say resulted in a $40,000 judgment won by attorney Lena Cherry, who has sued Ben Colosio 5 times and won each case. Both Colossios openly taunted law enforcement authorities Friday evening when they published a post on Facebook asking followers for recommendations on where to eat dinner. The post was made 10 hours after Jessica skipped her court appearance. Some commenters mocked the post. One wrote, "Try 3 Hots and a Cot downtown. They're on Front Street," a reference to the county jail's location. Another suggested Las Colinas, the women's prison in Santee. The responses included a picture of inmates receiving food in a prison cafeteria, as well as an animated clip of a dance sequence from Elvis Presley's movie Jailhouse Rock. The posts were removed, apparently by Ben Colosio, by the next morning. The hearing that Jessica Colosio missed was a proceeding in which she would have been questioned about personal assets. It was spurred by allegations that the Colosios had filed false mortgage documents to hide assets in order to avoid paying a judgment if one is ordered after the trial verdict. It is alleged that they have over $1 million in assets, with 2 homes in Fletcher Hills and Santee. One of the filings is a deed of trust in which the Colossios recorded a $500,000 loan taken out against their El Cajon residence. The record lists the lender as Israel Moses Seif. An investigation by the San Diego Union-Tribune found only one person named Israel Moses Seif, a man born in England in 1889 who died in 1972. Filing false real estate documents, if proven true in civil court, could open the Colossios up to criminal charges. Ben Colosio was subject to a debtor's examination 2 weeks ago, but did not fully cooperate with questioning. Judge Taylor threatened to send the councilman to jail and issued a contempt of court order, which he later vacated. After the hearing Friday, Attorney Parker said his clients are looking forward to a jury trial and called the evidence overwhelming. He criticized Colosio's alleged use of aliases and fake social media accounts to defame others as against the principles of a free democracy and despicable behavior of a public official. Ben Colosio pled guilty to 2 counts of violating California workers' compensation laws in 2015 and accepted a plea deal which allowed him to pay a fine. He remains on probation until October 1st, under orders to break no laws. Plaintiff's lawyers are seeking to have the councilman back in court in 2 weeks and to call for his probation to be revoked. If he is remanded into custody and misses 3 consecutive council meetings, he could be removed from office by the city council. An arrest could also damage his campaign against councilmember Gary Kendrick in the November election, as voters learn more about Colosio's legal and ethical scandals. Colosio also faces a separate federal lawsuit filed by activist Mark Lane, because Colosio deleted Lane's negative posts on his Facebook page. Lane's lawsuit comes on the heels of a May ruling in a case involving President Donald Trump's Twitter account. A New York federal judge ruled that public officials cannot delete negative social media posts by constituents because this viewpoint discrimination violates the First Amendment of the Constitution. Colosio has repeatedly stated that he does not wish to be contacted by East County Magazine or the San Diego Union-Tribune, which he has dismissed as fake media, despite numerous prominent journalism awards won by both news organizations. Our own news team recently won the San Diego Society for Professional Journalists' prestigious Gloria Penner Award for our coverage of Colosio's many threats. Meanwhile, virtually all major newspapers and TV stations in the San Diego region are now covering the Colosio scandals. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ in El Cajon, this is Jonathan Goetz.
In his campaign literature, El Cajon Councilman Ben Colosio has made some inflated claims about his record. Colosio claims that in his 2 years on the council, he brought the Marriott Hotel to town, as well as a new animal shelter, Live Nation to manage the Performing Arts Center, the El Cajon Elves to give gifts to seniors during the holidays, and electric charging stations in the city. Here's how the facts stack up against Colosio's claims. The city council approved the Marriott Courtyard Hotel project back in 2014, and the final agreement was approved in 2015, long before Colosio was elected. So his claim that he brought the Marriott to town is false. The council and staff have been debating the future of the East County Performing Arts Center for nearly a decade. In August 2016, city staff began discussions with Live Nations before Colosio took office. In December 2017, when the city council voted to approve a draft agreement with Live Nation to manage the theater, Colosio was absent. East County Magazine's article at the time noted that Colosio's opponent in the upcoming election, Councilman Gary Kendrick, was a driving force to save the theater. Thus, Colosio's claim that he brought Live Nation to town is also false. As for the new animal shelter, El Cajon voters approved a tax measure for its construction way back in 2004. The council approved the shelter's design and pre-construction services before Colosio took office. Colosio did vote with the rest of the council to unanimously approve the final contract and budget the night he was sworn in, but had no role in the 14 years of planning to build this new shelter. Colosio did propose that the council fund El Cajon Elves, a program he started. However, council did not approve funds for his request because the nonprofit beauty pageant founded by Colosio had its nonprofit status revoked by the state because he never obtained a federal tax ID number and had fraudulently represented the pageant as a nonprofit. Also, a jury previously found that Colosio committed fraud involving a business that he owned. So the city council instead approved funds for the Salvation Army to help seniors. Colosio did post video on social media of himself dressed as an elf delivering gifts to seniors at a retirement home, but it's false to claim that this was an action he brought in an official council capacity. The proposal to bring electric vehicle charging stations to El Cajon was proposed by city staff, not Colosio. Council did vote unanimously to approve the proposal, with Colosio voting in favor, but it's an overreach to claim that he alone was responsible. Colosio also promised that if re-elected, he will bring the Hampton Hotel to the old police station. However, the council approved a development agreement for the Hampton Inn on the site over 2 years ago, before Colosio joined the council, so this statement is false. Colosio also makes broad promises of other things he says he will do if re-elected, such as hiring 7 more police officers, adding 3 more patrol cars, and park rangers for all city parks. But it is unclear that he would fund these promises, particularly since he also calls for lowering sales tax. Perhaps he hopes to raise revenues by making El Cajon more like Santee, as he suggests, with added retail outlets. But it's too early to tell whether any of these claims could become reality. He also broadly promises to bring in companies such as Tesla, Intel, and Apple to hire locals, but provides no details on what incentives he has in mind to interest such major tech companies in El Cajon. We put this in the category of wishful thinking, not likely, though we wish this one could come true. He also states he would fire a bunch of highly paid city employees. But hiring and firing of most employees is not done by the city council, and some workers are protected by union contracts. Colosio could potentially make an argument to fire a non-protected worker, but he could not do so unilaterally. His campaign piece also calls for introducing a plan to help the homeless by getting them city jobs. But he previously proposed this action, which council rejected. Colosio says he wants to improve factors that keep home values high. While this could happen, he provided no specifics on how he would accomplish this. Colosio also says he would end the special interest groups corrupting City Hall. Ironically, Colosio's Middle Eastern Chamber of Commerce took a 4-figure payment from Waste Management, but Colosio failed to recuse himself from a council vote on trash hauling fees involving the company. So the city had to issue new notices to all residents involved at city expense, then held a new vote with Colosio recusing himself due to his own conflict of interest. Another claim made by Colosio is that his Middle Eastern Chamber of Commerce created hundreds of local jobs. He provides no substantiation of any jobs created. While chamber support of small businesses may have helped some increased hiring, recent controversies cast doubt on the chamber's effectiveness now. Colosio's chamber was forced to change its previous name after a court finding that it violated another organization's trademark. A civil case currently pending includes evidence deemed true and admissible by a judge, which indicates that Colosio and his wife commingled their personal assets with the chamber's assets. Colosio has become a lightning rod for criticism, with numerous citizens calling for his resignation at recent council meetings. He recently left the Democratic Party and is registered with no party affiliation after drawing critics in both major parties. The resignation calls came after a judge deemed evidence in a civil lawsuit true, including evidence that Colosio sexually harassed women in his beauty pageant and took out fake IDs on social media to harass and defame a local businessman, an attorney, and beauty contestants. Colosio also pled guilty to 2 counts of workers' compensation fraud in 2016 and remains on probation until October 1st of this year. One of the many facts about his background not mentioned in his campaign biography. Reporting for East County Magazine in El Cajon, this is Gene Carpenter.
Another fundraiser is planned to help survivors of the West Fire in Alpine. It will be held this Saturday, September 8th, from 2 to 7 p.m. at the American Legion Post in Alpine. There will be food and opportunity drawing, kids' zone, and music by the blues band Chet and the Committee. Stephanie Sorrells, director of the West Fire Victim Supply Outpost, says this event is to raise money mostly for survivors who were uninsured and are still struggling, including a man forced to live in his car and a woman left without electricity. The West Fire Victim Supply Outpost also needs volunteers to continue its efforts. You can find ticket information for this fundraiser at eastcountymagazine.org in our events section.
Indicted Republican Congressman Duncan Hunter Jr. could lose his congressional pension if he is convicted of felony corruption charges under federal reform laws. Those reform laws include the Honest Leadership and Open Government Act that his father, Duncan Hunter Sr., voted for in 2007. According to the press statement issued by the U.S. Attorney's Office, which filed the indictment, Hunter and his wife, Margaret, are charged with conspiracy to commit offenses against the United States, wire fraud, falsification of records, and prohibited use of campaign contributions. The 47-page indictment details the charges related to allegations that the Hunters stole $250,000 in campaign funds to use for lavish personal expenditures, such as vacations, jewelry, airfare for a pet rabbit, hotel rooms for the congressman's personal relationships, and children's private school tuition, while their personal accounts were overdrawn. The Honest Leadership and Open Government Act of 2007 was enacted following conviction of San Diego Congressman Randy Duke Cunningham on bribery charges. Cunningham kept his pension, although the federal government seized a portion to pay back taxes for his unreported income from bribes. Before then, only the most grave offenses, such as treason, would bar a member from getting their retirement pension. The Honest Leadership and Open Government Act bars members of Congress from receiving pensions if they are found guilty of a much broader range of offenses. Several of those include charges faced by Hunter, including wire fraud and conspiracy to commit an offense. Moreover, in 2012, the Stock Act was signed into law, further expanding the list of offenses for which a member of Congress and other officials shall lose their pensions. Those offenses include making false claims or false statements to the government. Hunter is accused of falsifying records in his campaign reports to the Federal Elections Commission, such as falsely claiming funds were spent on charitable giving when the funds were allegedly spent on personal uses, such as clothing purchases and family dental bills. Attempting to evade paying taxes is another crime for which a member would lose their congressional pension under the Stock Act. If the Hunters failed to declare as income money that they took from the campaign to use for personal expenses, they potentially could face tax liabilities. Federal law does give some leeway to the Office of Personnel Management to consider the impacts on a spouse and children when determining pension eligibility. However, a spouse found complicit or even non-cooperative in testifying against an indicted member can also be denied the member's pension. If a pension were to be provided to a convicted member's children found to have considerable financial need, measures must be taken to assure that the convicted congressional member will not benefit from any such payment. Hunter has claimed the investigation is a witch hunt. He has blamed partisan politics, even though the indictments were filed by a U.S. attorney appointed by Republican Attorney General Jeff Sessions, who in turn was appointed by Republican President Donald Trump. Trump, on Twitter, later blasted Sessions for allowing his Justice Department to bring charges against Hunter and another indicted member close to the November election. The president drew criticism from ethics experts for the remarks, suggesting politics should be a priority over justice. In court this week, Hunter asked to be excused from a court hearing slated later this month, but a federal judge in San Diego denied his request, stating that Hunter must be treated equally to anyone else facing felony charges. Hunter is running for re-election into the 50th Congressional District seat in November against Democratic challenger Amar Kampanajar. His trial could start as early as November, but a verdict is not expected until after the election, raising the prospect that voters could be saddled with the cost of a special election to replace him if he wins the election and is later convicted. If Hunter loses the election, taxpayers would not have to incur that expense.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. And today, my very special guest is Bill Baber with the La Mesa City Council. Bill, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Miriam.
Our subject today is marijuana regulations. And Bill, I understand that the La Mesa City Council just passed some very significant marijuana legislation. Tell us about that.
Well, on the ballot in November is Prop V for victory, which will allow the city of La Mesa to put a business excise tax on cannabis businesses in La Mesa, both medicinal and adult use.
Very interesting. Now, as background listeners, currently in La Mesa, there was a ballot measure passed a couple of years ago that allowed for the sale of medicinal but not recreational marijuana. And of course, statewide, the law allows personal use of marijuana for whatever reason, but it's up to each city to regulate whether or not they want to allow sales or commercial growing and that sort of thing. So what prompted La Mesa to do this?
The voters in 2016 passed Prop 64, which was the adult use recreational statewide. And then simultaneously, the voters in La Mesa passed Prop U, which allowed for medicinal dispensaries. So in 2017 and 18, the city has gone through the process of working out the permitting process of how medicinal dispensaries are going to function, where they're going to be located, how are they going to function. And along the way, we realized that in consulting with other cities that it's possible to have a excise tax on these businesses. They cost a little bit more to process.
Now, an excise tax is different than a sales tax. You're not
Correct.
Talking about the consumer paying a sales tax on the marijuana.
Prop V is an excise tax. The sales tax would apply to a retail sale, but that's not something we're controlling. It's
right,
just like you buy anything else in La Mesa, or it's the same sales tax. Yeah, except that medicinal will be exempted from the sales tax if it's medicinal recognized by the official California medicinal card.
Okay, so it would charge an excise tax. Now, is this also legalizing the cannabis businesses that are recreational? In other words, it's going beyond the medicinal.
No, initiatives have to have single subjects. So this single subject is to put an excise tax on cannabis business. As a separate matter, we're working on an adult use ordinance that would bring the opportunity for adult use businesses to come alongside medicinal. Probably, as we work it through, it'll be simplified. There'll probably be, if you have a medicinal license and you've been functioning and you've met all the requirements and you're a good citizen, you'll probably just be able to upgrade to an adult use license.
So you'd be able to say recreational as well.
Yeah, we haven't written it yet, but that makes the most sense.
So I understand that the council is working on passing this latter measure on their own as a council measure, rather than waiting to see if voters put an initiative through for recreational. And the reason for that, I understand, is there were some issues, were there not, with the language in the medicinal initiative that the voters approved a couple of years ago.
Correct. When Prop U came in, it set the standard for how these medicinal dispensaries were going to be regulated. And under the California law, when an initiative comes in, the council can't fix it, correct it, change it. Well, there are some things that probably should have been fixed and made correct. So instead of waiting for another initiative from the citizens, we thought, let's do our own regulation, move it forward, and then we can tinker with it. I love initiatives because it allows the people to supersede the elected officials and take control. That's great. The downside of it is it's a one-time written document and you can't fix it. It's better if you have an ordinance to allow the council to take feedback, learn, make adjustments, and as the market changes, yeah, you can make a change.
Yeah, I mean, to be specific about it, the city is facing a lawsuit right now from an applicant for a marijuana dispensary who got, you know, quite far through the process before it was determined that the same center had a child-based business. And the initiative had said, well, you can't have these near child-based businesses, but it was a very narrow definition. And, you know, so I guess it was kind of a gray area of, is this one or isn't it? The council ruled that it was. And now this guy's suing. So you're trying to prevent those kinds of issues in the future by crafting a recreational ordinance that would pass legal muster, so to speak.
Correct.
Okay, that makes sense. So what's the vote breakdown on this? First of all, on the excise measure, Measure V, that would put an excise tax on marijuana businesses, Prop V, how did the vote split on the council on that?
The vote was 5-0 to put it on the ballot.
What is your sense of how much support or lack of it is there on the council currently for making recreational cannabis sales legal in the city of La Mesa?
You know, we haven't had a hard vote yet, so I can't actually tell. And, mm-hmm. and Brown Act prohibits you from counting votes. But
good point.
I think that I'm guessing probably a majority that want to move forward with it for a variety of reasons. Number one is what we said before. If you don't take the bull by the horns, if you don't regulate it, someone else is going to come in and regulate it. And it's part of our duty to serve the constituents of La Mesa by doing reasonable regulations.
And what about the crime issue? I know when I've talked to people in the sheriff department, I've heard sometimes that the illegal dispensaries that pop up create a lot of crime problems. It's like whack-a-mole where they're constantly closing these down and there's issues with robberies, whereas the ones that are actually legal and regulated, they've had a lot fewer problems with.
That is true. That was a big motivator to us moving forward with this dual approach, the taxation on one hand and then the moving to adult use on the other one. We had illegal dispensaries popping up all over La Mesa,
yeah,
a lot on University Avenue, El Cajon Boulevard, and it would take us a long time through the civil justice system to get rid of them.
Right, and these guys move in and they make so much money in a very short time, they don't really care if they get shut down,
yes,
in 3 or 4
and
months.
We eventually had to go with our great city attorney and we were getting TROs to shut them down. Our police had to come in,
yeah,
and shut it down, our fire department. It took a lot of resources to do that. One of the motivations to moving into a legal adult use dispensary model is, number one, the revenue will help us clean out the bad guys. Number two is the folks who are playing by the rules, who are regulated, who are legal, are going to have a strong motivation to push out the illegal ones. And that's why we need to take a step in this. The legal businesses that have guards, who the police can visit, who are fully regulated, that's not where the crime is going to be. The crime is in the shady, illegal ones. And we need to push those shady, illegal ones out of La Mesa.
Yeah, and it's interesting. We should mention you've had bipartisan support for this on the La Mesa Council.
We do.
Yeah,
yes.
It's one of those areas where liberal philosophy and libertarian philosophy kind of come full circle and actually agree on this one to some degree.
Yes, they do. And we respect the will of the voters. Remember the Prop 64, which made recreational marijuana legal in California, passed by 57% in La Mesa. Mm-hmm. And Prop U, which made medicinal dispensaries, passed 53%. So the voters of La Mesa wanted this, and we're just trying to figure out how to make it work for everybody, both for the folks who are in the business because they want to be able to have a fair process to come and go through the regulatory.
Correct.
Their neighbors, which is, you know, part of the challenge,
mm-hmm,
of it. For our police, because it does add burden to them and that revenue we're going to generate will help that. and our city staff to process. These are not easy things to process. And so it's put a burden on our city staff too. So the revenue we generated will help that.
Sure. Now, for those who have been concerned about the recreational use of marijuana, what about those who would argue they're concerned about exposure to, say, children or location of these things near things like schools or daycare centers or churches? Would the regulation that you're looking at enacting through La Mesa, in your opinion, need to have certain restrictions on where these kinds of businesses could be located?
Well, the current medicinal regulation passed by the voters puts a 1,000-foot bubble around from a sensitive use.
Mm-hmm.
When we eventually, hopefully, finish the adult use, we'll probably have that, keep that 1,000-foot bubble, plus add some more sensitive uses to it. Because this is a type of business like a bar or a smoke shop that doesn't fit in every community.
Correct.
Every
yeah.
neighborhood. And so you have to regulate them. Right now, they're only allowed in the commercial and industrial areas. And there isn't that a huge number of those in La Mesa.
Yeah, like where the wineries and breweries are going.
Right. Anyway. Right. The first legal dispensary is up there with the wineries and breweries. That's more suitable. But these are definitely not showing up in neighborhood places.
Okay. What about the safety of the consumer? Is that a factor? What I'm thinking of is for the person, whether they're a recreational or a medicinal user, there's certainly concerns about if the only place you can get this stuff is an illegal dispensary, especially, I guess, for the recreational ones now. Does that put the consumer at risk of getting an adulterated product, something that could be contaminated, laced with harder drugs? I know I've actually talked to a sheriff commander recently who told me some of the illegal shops are actually selling more than marijuana. You can go in there and get methamphetamine or cocaine or other things that they're selling.
Well, the state of California, after the recreational initiative passed in 2016, is building up their regulatory infrastructure and adding many more safeguards, including testing on that, because it's a legal business in California.
Right.
And the state has to step in and make sure legal businesses are selling legal products and safe products. So that
yeah.
the safety of the product is really at the state level. If we do adult use or medicinal dispensaries correctly in La Mesa, it pushes out the shady spots where you don't know what you're going to get.
Correct.
A regulated, well-run, clean environment is going to be much safer than the shady places.
Are there any estimates for how much revenue might be generated through the excise tax on cannabis businesses in La Mesa if the voters approve Prop V?
Our finance department projects somewhere between $1.5 million and $2 million per year.
And once again, Prop V would approve the excise tax.
Correct.
But it doesn't by itself legalize recreational. It's simply setting the framework to say that this excise tax could be imposed on currently medicinal facilities, marijuana facilities, dispensaries. And should the council or the voters ever put forward and pass a recreational, then the excise tax framework would be in place for that as well. But
correct.
It's not by itself legalizing recreational.
No, it's purely a tax. And if you read the text of the initiative, it sets a range. And the council sets an initial range. And for mm-hmm. the record, there is no excise tax on pure medicinal at this,
okay.
at this time, because I know there have been some medicinal patients who worried that they shouldn't have to pay extra for their medicine. Under Prop V, it starts at zero for the medicinal patients.
Mm-hmm.
It's a business tax. What it isn't is a consumer tax.
It's not a sales tax,
right?
Is there anything else that you would like our listeners to know about either Prop V or the proposed council measure that's under discussion for recreational marijuana?
Well, Prop V is on the ballot in November, and I would ask you if you live in La Mesa to vote for it. Whatever you may think of regulating cannabis, it's important that we're able to tax it to pay for the resources the city has to spend to process it. And we're hoping that some of those resources will go to our city attorney staff and our legal staff to push out the illegal businesses.
Listeners, if you just tuned in, we've been speaking with Councilman Bill Baber from the La Mesa City Council. Thank you very much, Bill, for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the mountains to the sea.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Valerie Watts
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This week's Destination East County includes live music in downtown El Cajon, the Saquon Powwow, star parties at Mission Trails, and the Ramona Grape Stomp.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including raspberry picking and farm tours at Julian Farm and Orchard, Hank Williams Jr. at Viejas, Gregory Page and Sky Ladd in concert at Schwazdale Winery in Ramona, the Julian Music Festival, the Santa Isabel Mission's Bicentennial Celebration and Harvest Festival, Alley Cat Art Walk in El Cajon, a masquerade ball in El Cajon, spooky camping at Lake Jennings, our own East County Dining Club at Fourpenny House in La Mesa, Fair Trade Shopping, and the Borrego Days Desert Festival.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
El Cajon's Dinner and a Concert events continue each Friday night from 6 to 8 p.m. at Prescott Promenade on Main Street in downtown El Cajon. Bring a picnic dinner or arrive early and dine at a local restaurant. Bring a receipt from participating downtown restaurants to enter a prize drawing. Concerts coming up include an Elvis tribute by Scott Bruce on September 7th, a Tom Petty tribute by the Petty Breakers on September 14th, Sirens Crush playing modern pop and dance music September 21st, and the Mighty Untouchables for the season finale on September 28th.
The Sequon Band of the Kumeyaay Nation will host its annual powwow September 7th, 8th, and 9th at the powwow grounds in front of the Sequon Casino on Dehesa Road. That's located on the Sequon Reservation in unincorporated El Cajon.
You're invited to join members of the San Diego Astronomy Association and Mission Trails Regional Park volunteers for a star party to view the night sky through telescopes from 7 to 10 p.m. on Friday, September 7th and Saturday, September 22nd in the Kumeyaay Lake Campground parking lot. For directions to Mission Trails Regional Park, visit mtrp.org.
The Ramona Grape Stomp invites you to come squish grapes in a stomping competition, taste local wines, bid on silent auction items, and shop at more than 40 local crafters and vendors. The Ramona Grape Stomp will be held on September 8th from 12 to 5 p.m. at the Ramona Outdoor Community Center in Ramona. For all the juicy details, you can visit RamonaGrapeStomp.com.
Now for a preview of coming attractions.
Alley Cat Art Walk will take place on Friday, September 14th from 5 to 8 p.m. in downtown El Cajon. It's the perfect place for lovers of arts and music. Plus, you can enjoy wine tasting, a beer garden, artisan craft booths, boutique vendors, live music, and children's activities in addition to fine art. Activities will be held in Arts Alley between Main and Reyes Streets, as well as surrounding streets. Alley Cat Art Walk is organized by St. Madeline's Sophie Center, which helps developmentally disabled adults, and is supported by a San Diego County Community Enhancement Grant.
The 49th Annual Julian Music Festival will celebrate end of summer at Mangini Winery in Julian on Saturday, September 15th from 1 to 7 p.m. This year's festival will feature a variety of musical genres, including Americana, contemporary jazz, folk, and more. For advanced tickets and a full list of performers, you can visit julianmusicfestival.com.
The Santa Isabel Indian Mission is celebrating its bicentennial on September 16th. The multicultural celebration will include an outdoor mass and brunch with the bishop, Native American bird singers and drummers, a flyover by the Navy's Blue Angels, military salutes, multicultural dance groups, local celebrities, a historical wagon train show, tours of the mission and museum, native speakers and historians, an arts and crafts show, and more. The mission was founded in 1918 as an outpost of the San Diego Mission de Alcala and has been holding services ever since in a series of structures through the last 200 years. The mission fell into disrepair and was nearly forced to shut down, but now a committee has formed that's been working hard to restore the facilities and revive traditional celebrations for the community, including the bicentennial event on September 16th, as well as bringing back the Harvest Festival on October 20th, and a fiesta in June of next year. Volunteers and donations are needed to sustain this monumental effort. You can learn more or get involved by visiting the Santa Isabel Indian Mission on Facebook.
Raspberries at Julian Farm and Orchard are ready to be picked. Blackberries are almost ready, and next, corn and pumpkins. You can enjoy raspberry picking and farm tours on Saturdays from noon to 6 p.m. from September 15th through October 13th. The farm is located on Highway 78 on the Santa Isabel side of the highway next to Winola Pizza. Julian Farm and Orchard is owned by the same people who operate the Julian Mining Company across the street. You can also enjoy tractor-drawn hay rides, barnyard visits, and shopping at the Farmer's Wife store in addition to picking berries and other crops on weekends starting September 15th. For more information, you can visit julianminingcompany.com.
Legendary singer Hank Williams Jr. will be live in concert at Viejas and Alpine on September 21st. He first took to the stage at the Grand Ole Opry at age 14 and has since had hits for the common man, from A Country Boy Can Survive to It's Hard Standing in the Shadow of a Very Famous Man, referring to his father, Hank Williams Sr., as well as his Monday Night Football song and his latest hit, Stirring It Up. Tickets are available at the Viejas gift shop at axs.com or by phone at 888-929-7849.
Gregory Page and pianist Sky Ladd will perform at Schwazdale Winery in Ramona on September 22nd from 1 to 4 p.m. for an afternoon of vintage and perhaps even some brand new music on the Vineyard stage. To borrow Gregory's famous lyrics, Let's Wine and Dine, you can wine and dine on Schwazdale's estate wines and artisan pizzas while savoring music from the duo. The same adjectives that sommeliers use to describe wine can be said for Gregory Page's music: elegant, opulent, full-bodied, bright, refined, complex, and velvety, with a hint of imagination and magic. For more information, you can visit schwazdalewinery.com.
The East County Dining Club invites you to their next dinner, which will be held at the Four Penny House Scottish Restaurant and Brewery in La Mesa on Wednesday, September 26th at 6:30 p.m. You can savor some authentic Scottish cuisine, choosing from a menu that includes such specialties as bangers and mash, Scottish mussels, crofter's pie, fresh salmon, Yorkshire wraps, artisanal cheeses, Scottish paella, curry roasted cauliflower, and bread pudding. Four Penny House will donate 20% of proceeds to benefit East County Magazine and our East County Wildfire and Emergency Alerts. There will also be prize drawings. RSVP to reserve space at 619-698-7617 or email editor@eastcountymagazine.org. You can check out the menu at fourpennyhouse.com.
Lake Jennings in Lakeside is hosting spooky Campoween events the 2 weekends before Halloween, October 19th through 21st and 26th through 28th, complete with ghost stories, s'mores, a campsite decorating contest, trick-or-treating, and creepy crafts. On Friday nights, get in the spirit with ghost stories and s'mores at 7 p.m. Then on Saturdays, there will be campsite trick-or-treating from 4 to 5 p.m., followed by a campsite decorating contest with judging at 6 p.m. Prizes include an all-inclusive camping weekend. And on Sundays, you can also enjoy creepy craft time at 10 a.m. For campground reservations, you can call 619-390-1623. And for more information, visit lakejennings.org.
A Night to Remember is a masquerade ball to benefit St. Madeline Sophie Center. It will be held on September 28th from 7 p.m. to midnight at the Crystal Palace in El Cajon. This magical evening of festivities and excitement will include dinner and an open bar, a fashion show, a saxophone player and a violinist, plus a DJ to dance the night away. For tickets and reservations, you can visit Stephanie Young Consulting at syc.ticketleap.com.
You're invited to shop with joy and purpose at the annual La Mesa Fair Trade Shopping event on Sunday, October 14th from 8 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. at St. Martin of Tours Parish Hall in La Mesa. You can enjoy fair trade ice cream and food samples while perusing handmade baskets, jewelry, leather goods, clothing, toys, pottery, Christmas ornaments, gift baskets, coffee, tea, chocolate, and more. You can make a difference with your purchases this season by improving people's lives and the environment. The goal of the fair trade movement is to pay farmers and artisans in developing countries a fair price for their goods to help alleviate poverty around the world.
The 7th annual Haunt Fest on Main is back on Friday, October 19th from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. in the 200 block of East Main Street in downtown El Cajon. This fun, family-friendly Halloween-themed community event features live music, costume contests, carnival rides and games, candy challenge activities, Monsters, Inc., and Monsters University outdoor movies, face painting, craft booths, inflatables, and more. For more information, visit hauntfest.org.
An air parade will sweep the skies with over 30 vintage and military aircraft as part of this year's parade in Borrego Springs on Saturday, October 20th at 10 a.m. followed by a 10:30 street parade complete with floats, equestrians, trick-riding cowboys, marching bands, and more. It's all part of the two-day 53rd Annual Borrego Days Festival, October 20th and 21st. Borrego Days includes crafts, vendors, kids' activities such as rock climbing, carnival rides, and inflatable slides, food and drinks, plus live music to dance the night away. You can find more information at borregodays.com.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more in the calendar and events section of our website, eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or you'd like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show here on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around East County!
A controversial proposal for a sand mining project in Lakeside's East El Monte Valley is moving forward. The county has published a draft environmental impact report on the project and will hold a public scoping meeting on Tuesday, September 25th, from 5:30 to 8 p.m. in the Lakeside Community Center. The county seeks public comments, which you can deliver during the meeting or by email or mail no later than October 29th at 4 p.m. The environmental impact report raises serious concerns and acknowledges that the project has the potential to increase exposure of workers, residents, and visitors to potentially deadly valley fever spores. Sand mining would also negatively impact sensitive and protected species, such as gnatcatchers and glossy snakes, as well as generate noise, dust, impacts on traffic, and potentially archaeological resources. The project has generated substantial opposition in the community. The proposed project would extract over 12.5 million tons of sand and gravel over 12 years on a 479-acre site, including the San Diego River Channel. About 228 acres of the land would be used for mining in four phases, with reclamation planned at the end of each stage. The project's supporters say the sand is needed to meet demand for road construction in our county. The mining would produce 557 tons of sand and gravel each hour, requiring 157 truck trips each day, 6 days a week, starting at 7 a.m. The public meeting on this project, again, is slated for Tuesday, September 25th at 5:30 p.m. in the Lakeside Community Center. For information on how to submit comments in writing by that October 29th deadline, you can call the County Planning Department at 858-495-5802 or visit the Preserve Our El Monte page on Facebook. That number again is 858-495-5802. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ in Lakeside, this is John Fistier.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia, and the Smashing Beats. Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.